But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Chapter 2. There's a moment of surprised silence. Path? Fives asks, and he picks his way up to John's side. The crystals are a path? John inclines his head as Echo slips up on his other side, wary of his footing. Reaching out, he points to a particular pattern, fern-like and feathery, that unspools down the wall, endlessly repeating. I followed those markings across 6 planets, he says, a little wry. Nico had been called away to deal with Maul early on in their search, and that left John to follow Faye's vague recollection of stories from 300 years ago and what little he could slice from the Jedi archives. Are there really that many lost Jedi temples? Fives asks, startled. It seems like the kind of thing someone would want to find. This one was lost on purpose, John says quietly. The Force pulls, insistent, and he slips past Echo, gently pushing him back with a hand on his chest. The water looks the same depth here as everywhere else, but when he slides a boot forward to test it, there's a ledge. Frowning, John crouches down, since he can't exactly get much wetter than he already is, and drags his fingers across the surface to get an idea of its width. The same fractal pattern repeats in the surface, and John allows himself a flicker of satisfaction. Here, he says, stay close to the wall and you should be fine. I'll go first. Echo grimaces, but he finds the ledge with his foot, easing out onto it. Are there any predators? He asks. Anything about to come out of the water and eat us that we should know about? Probably not, John says, and his voice is the only thing about him that's dry. Coming from a Jedi, I don't know if that means something good or bad, Fives jokes, but he follows, bolder than his fellow trooper, more at ease on the narrow ledge. Every time General Skywalker tells us that absolutely everything is fine and there's nothing to worry about, someone dies. It stings to hear that. Sinks talons into John's chest and tears, and he has to breathe carefully. The Jedi are doing the best they can, but it's not enough. It will never be enough, given how many have already died. I won't let that happen, he says quietly. Not unless I'm dead first. Echo's breath is loud, even over the rushing water. And John can hear Five's gauntlets creak like he just curled a hand into a fist. There's a long moment of silence, and then Five says, you don't even know us. And besides, Echo adds more quietly, but more forcefully, there are millions of clones and only 10,000 Jedi. If anyone should be dying for someone else, it's us for you, sir. I don't see it that way, John says, soft, without looking back. If I let you do that, I'm not a Jedi at all, just a coward with a lightsaber. That's not how wars work, sir, Echo says, exasperated. You are a CO. You need to be protected. Then maybe the Jedi shouldn't be in the war, John tells him flatly. Turns his head, following a flash of light from underneath the water, and steps out into the river without hesitation. Fives yelps, lunging after him with a hand outstretched, but John's foot lands on the ledge that cuts through the center of the riverbed, leading towards an opening in the far wall, and holds. Criff, Fives mutters, prying his fingers off John's cloak. Warn us next time, sir. You're going to give us a heart attack. Sorry, John says, and means it. He was frustrated, but That's not an excuse. That's never an excuse. See if you can trace the pattern with your boot. It should show you the way. Sir, if we can ask, what exactly was so important in this temple that they decided to just misplace themselves? Fives asks, carefully edging out into the current. He offers Echo a hand, and Echo takes it gladly, following him out with wary steps. It makes John realize, belatedly, that he likely should have made the same offer, but if they're close to the old temple, there are likely traps at best and enemies at worst. It's probably better that John has both hands free to defend them. The Jedi here were experts in crafting lightsabers, John says, and reaches for the far wall, feels the branching pattern, feathery against the smooth crystal, and traces it downstream. The ledge rises from the water at a shallow angle, and by the time they reach the sweeping curve of the next bend, it's almost completely above the surface, which at least makes the footing less treacherous. I thought the Jedi built their own lightsabers, Echo says carefully. As, like, a ritual? Commander Tano told us about having to find the crystal on a special planet and everything. Lightsabers are an expression of a Jedi's purpose, John says. He's been around Faye and her opinions on such things for too long to think they're a Jedi's life, the way some do. But he knows how much care he takes with his own, and all the reverence that went into creating it. It's one of the few happy memories he has of his training, because Dark Woman helped him, was proud of him, thought his new lightsaber was a beautiful, well-crafted thing, worthy of being carried by a Jedi. They don't need to be made by our hands, though most are. There are legacy lightsabers that can mean just as much. Is that what you're looking for? Fives asks interestedly. One of the legacy ones. Something that belonged to the first Jedi? Something extra powerful? Something like that, John says, amused. It's a lightsaber with a special crystal in the hilt. To make it a different color? Fives asks, wrinkling his nose. What, blue and green and yellow weren't cool enough for you? You always could have gone with purple then. John flinches, involuntary and instinctive, and ducks his head, wants to reach for his hood, pull it up to hide his face, but it's sopping wet and won't do much, but Dark Woman's lightsaber is purple, and he's never had any fond memories associated with it. It's not just color, he says roughly, and picks up his pace a little, following the path around the bend. The river opens out beyond it, the channel becoming wide and the tunnel arching up into a vast cavern as the water slows. The path rises from the water, and there's no hiding now that it's created rather than natural. There are steps leading up to a walkway, multicolored crystal carved with images of trees and birds and animals in an interlocking tangle. Old, John thinks, pressing his fingers to them. Very old and very beautiful, done by a master craftsman and meant to lead somewhere important. We're close, he says, straightening, and glances back at Echo and Fives. I don't know what state the temple will be in. Stay close. Yes, sir. Fives' tone is almost joking, but he grimaces faintly as he steps onto the walk. How did you even find this place? The Force tells me where to go, John says softly. It's one of the things he's always been best at, reading those kind of currents. Animal instincts, Noel calls them when she wants to tease him, but they're not all that far off. Dark Woman stripped his senses down, took them away one by one while they trained, until only the Force was left. John trusts it more than he could ever trust a living thing, hears it more clearly than any Jedi he's met. Faye has her own connection to it, deep and intrinsic, but it's not the same as John's, desperate, forged in blood. "You don't have any troops," Echo observes. And when John glances back, Echo is watching him closely. "I thought pretty much all Jedi got at least a squad or two." John looks away. "I'm not command material," he says and starts walking. There's tension under his skin, a twist like nerves he hasn't felt in years. But he lets the feeling go, breathes out. There's no time. The sun will be rising soon, and they need to find the temple before that happens. Another month of Sidious in power likely won't mean all that much in the long run, but in lives cost, the cost is too great. It's already taken them too long to unravel his plans and figure out their own, and they can't wait any longer. "I don't know," Five says, a little dry. "You've got the grim and broody and snappy thing down pretty well." "Fives!" Echo hisses, but John hesitates. Grimaces, then comes to a halt, raking a hand through his wet hair. Fives is right. He hasn't... Most of the time he's dealing with criminals, even now. Criminals or Faye and Noel and Nico who know him. Having to interact with people who don't is unsettling. John can't just grunt at them and have them understand the meaning of it. "No," he says, quiet. "He's right. Forgive me." "What?" Five says, caught off guard. "No, that wasn't... You act just like Colt used to. That's all I meant. I wasn't complaining." "Yes, you were," Echo says, rolling his eyes. He takes two more steps to catch up with John, brushing their shoulders together like they're comrades, and says, "Sorry, sir, we really do just want to help. If you're doing something important and you need more hands, we want you to use ours. You saved Fives. It's the least we can do." John eyes him, but Echo's gaze doesn't waver, firm and settled, steady. After a second, John has to look away, a curl in his stomach that's too close to warmth. He ran into Jango Fett on a mission once, back when he was a knight. Echo is a different person entirely, but that same thread of attraction is there. John likes his face, likes the way he holds himself, and the knowledge that Echo is dangerous. He likes the stubborn determination to save Fives, too. It's not the type of thing he'll allow to be a problem, especially since he's fairly sure they feel things for each other already, but the thought is there. "Please don't call me sir," he manages, and wishes a little desperately that he could pull his hood up. "Just John." "Permission to call a Jedi by their first name?" Five says on his other side, and the smirk he gives John is quick and wicked. "How many other clones do you think have gotten that, Echo?" "Are we counting Cody?" Echo asks dryly. "I think he's probably calling General Kenobi by his first name, seeing as they're sleeping together." Fives pulls a face. "Assuming General Kenobi ever sleeps," he says, then catches a glimpse of Echo's smirk and levels a finger at him. "Whatever you're about to say, don't." John can't help it. He chuckles, ducking his head and says, "Come on, only a little further." "You said the crystals were going to go dark soon," Echo observes, following him down the walkway, close at his heels. "Are we going to have to figure out how to get back upstream in the dark?" John shakes his head. "There should be a back way out, through the temple itself," he says. "The river was an easier entrance than trying to find one hidden door in a mountain. Believing through it should be easy enough."
"I didn't even realize Jedi did this kind of thing," Five says. "The whole hidden temple with secret entrances thing. Isn't that supposed to be the Sith?"
"They went underground to hide from the Sith," John answers, and reaches out, tracing his fingers over a stretch of crystal that forms a repeating, echoing pattern. Back during one of the old wars, a host of Sith Lords banded together to steal their collection of crystals. So they hid themselves, even from other Jedi, in case one of the Order fell to the dark side and betrayed their location. And then they died out, and no one could find them, even to recover what they'd made. There's a pause, and then Fives grimaces.
That's creepy, he mutters. If they're so lost, how did you find them? Someone must have tried before.
The Force tells me where to go, John says.
Because that's more believable than telling them that Fae is old enough to remember the war in question and met people who visited the temple once.
John's penchant for ending up where he needs to be helped, especially given that 500 years is long enough to make anyone's memory a little unreliable. That seems convenient, Echo offers, a little wry. Just listen to something invisible and it'll put you where you need to be. But how can you be sure that it's the Force and not you wanting to go somewhere? John snorts quietly.
Faith, I trust the Force to guide me, and my own ability to touch it.
When Echo and Fives exchange looks, he raises a brow at them, sardonic.
The Jedi are a religious order.
He doesn't tend to associate with the Order as it stands. Didn't even before he and the others faked their deaths, but what the Order stands for has always been the hill John has set himself upon, unwavering. Dark Woman raised him, honed him, but the Order, it gave him something to believe in, and John has walked dark paths, but never wavered in that, at least.
Guess I always forget that, Echo says with a faint frown.
Five shrugs a little. It's not like General Skywalker seems to believe in all that much except the Force being powerful, he says. And John doesn't twitch, but it's a near thing. And we always see the Jedi on the battlefield, not in their temples.
Jedi show faith through action, John says. Whether they're in the temple or not doesn't matter.
There's a curve in the path ahead of them, and he steps around the wall, then pulls up short.
Oh, Five says from behind him, stunned. It's huge.
It is, particularly for not being the main temple. The river turns here, flowing past the front of the structure carved into the path. And the cavern soars above it in a grand sweep of light. John can hear a waterfall in the distance, but here the eddying water forms whirlpools that catch and shatter the light, reflecting back the crystal's multicolored glow and making the light seem to dance. Beyond the river, rising from the water, is the temple itself. Pale carved stone and stark sweeping lines. The front walkway is wide, open, arching away from the feet of the building to meet the crystal path on their side of the river. And John lets out a breath of relief. The river is probably deep here, and it's wide enough that John wouldn't have been able to leap it, especially not with two other people in tow.
High point of the day so far. We don't have to swim, Echo says, a little amused.
Speak for yourself. The high point for me was the mysteriously appearing Jedi who made me not die, Fives retorts. And when John glances at him, he grins.
Truths, John.
John snorts, starting for the bridge.
I'm glad I could help, he says wryly.
Echo is quiet for a moment, the thump of his boots the only sign that he's following.
Is that the kind of thing you would call the Force intervening? He asks. Because the odds that a Jedi would have been in exactly the part of the tunnels that we landed in, and a Jedi who could heal at that?
He reaches out like he can't help it, and Fives catches his hand, giving him a quick smile.
Yes, John says, soft and means it. I would think the Force put me where I needed to be.
He turns his gaze ahead of him, stepping over the join where crystal-veined rocks and plain stone meet, and says,
I don't feel any animal life in the temple, but be careful.
We have your back, Echo says firmly, gripping his blaster as he sweeps a careful look over the walk and the entrance to the building beyond it.
Do you think the Seps made it down here?
If a whole Sith Council didn't, I doubt the Separatists could, John says dryly.
There are statues of the two founding masters of this temple flanking the entrance, solemn and hooded, both of the women holding lightsabers in one hand and a sword in the other, and John minds his step on the path between them. They were both master smiths, from what Fae said, and created for the joy of it rather than for the sake of forging powerful weapons. John doesn't think either would mind his intentions for their most dangerous lightsaber, but better not to risk offending whatever force ghosts linger. The main doors stand closed, tightly shut, and John lays a hand against them, trying to sense a locking mechanism, something he can use to open them that isn't brute strength. It takes a long moment, the weight of the stone unfamiliar.
Hey, look, Five says, from behind one of the statues, leaning in to poke at the bricks.
This looks like... With a grating groan, the stone sinks into the wall. John spins, meeting Echo's resigned, exasperated expression, and then growls.
Move!
Even as he says it, there's a rumble, distant but growing louder, like an approaching wave. And John curses, throws himself against the doors with all his strength brought to bear as he shoves.
Griffing hell, Fives, Echo says,
and an instant later he slams his shoulder into the stone right beside John. The rumble becomes a roar, and John takes one look back at the tunnel, sees a solid wall of water, and grabs for the force.
What the hell kind of booby trap is that?
Fives demands a little frantically, and joins Echo with a groan of effort as they throw their whole weight against the stone. Stepping back, John tangles as much power as he dares into one hard shove right at the seal of the doors. And there's a jerk. With a squeal of rusted over hinges, the first one moves, cracks open just enough to fit a body through, and John snaps, "Go!" as the water surges up like a tsunami. Echo stuffs himself through the gap, dragging Fives along beside him, and John bears half a second to grab for the depressed stone, hauling it back out flush with the rest of the wall, then throws himself through. Instantly, Echo and Fives put their shoulders to the door, and John turns, does the same, and slams the huge door closed just as the wave reaches the bridge. There's a clatter, a muffled roar. Water floods under the door, washing over their boots, then retreats, and the noise dies down again into ringing silence.
Carking slag,
Five groans, and slides down the door to thump to the ground.
What was that?
John's own heartbeat isn't anywhere close to steady, and he pushes his hair back from his face with a grimace, stepping away enough to eye the door.
A good way to flush out the tunnels, apparently, he says, and Echo laughs raggedly.
No touching anything, he tells Fives, who pulls a face at him, then glances up at John, faintly wary.
Sorry, sir, he says with a grimace.
John snorts, quietly amused, and offers him a hand up.
Leave off the sirs. It motivated us to open the doors faster, he says. I'll take it.
Five snickers, but takes his hand, and his grip is firm as he lets John haul him to his feet.
That's one way, sure.
He grips John's wrist for just a moment, then says,
I guess it's a good thing we're not going back up the river.
With a grimace, John inclines his head. He'd be twitchy the whole way if they did, just waiting for another flood. Far better for all three of them if they find the back way out now.
The whole place was built to survive a war, he says. Watch what you touch.
Or just keep your hands around your blaster and stop poking at everything, Echo says, exasperated.
But he grips Five's elbow, leans in. John looks away as they bump foreheads, recognizing a Keldaba kiss when he sees one. He might not be able to give them a lot of privacy, but he can at least not stare. The main hall of the tunnel is enough of a distraction anyway. There are three wide halls, slanting away in different directions. The walls covered in draping vines and moss, the floor in a thick carpet of green. When John takes two steps into the hall running straight ahead of them, he feels a tug, subtle but insistent, and breathes out. How long until sunrise? He asks quietly. At this point, probably half an hour, Echo says. And a moment later, he joins John, studying the hall with a frown. We should probably find lights. I lost my helmet when we fell, but Fives' helmet lights should still work. We'll have to stay close together, though. John shakes his head. There are plants, he says simply. Sunlight reaches this place. Startled, Echo glances at him, then up towards the roof of the temple. There are long, narrow vents carved into the stone, reaching upwards until they vanish into the darkness. And John's willing to bet money on them being made to let light in. That will be useful, Fives observes, then glances at John. You know where to go?
No is a strong word, John says dryly.
But he heads down the forward path, boots careful on the covering of moss. The vines make something in his chest relax a little. He doesn't like being underground, generally. And as pretty as the crystals are, the lack of anything more organic was weighing on him. The force is a steady pull, though, firm and unwavering. John picks his way through the silent halls, half an eye on the wide, arching doorways that open off of it in the darkness, and knows they're going the right way, even as the building gets darker and darker.
You said you serve with the 501st, he says, glancing back.
Fives is watching him while Echo watches the path behind them, and it makes John's nerves settle just a little.
Have you been with them for the whole war?
Fives shakes his head. We weren't in the first deployments, he says. Our squad was younger, and we got deployed later, to Rishi Station. When the Seps attacked the base, we were the only survivors. There's an edge of grim satisfaction when he adds, Our squad mate, Heavy, he's the one who alerted the fleet of the Battle of Kamino. He blew up the base with himself still inside to turn off the all-clear beacon. John glances at the patches on their armor, the image of a rotary blaster with four Heavy curled around it, and then away.
He sounds like he was very brave, he says quietly.
He was a bastard, Echo says, but he sounds proud. But he was Domino's bastard. Fives snorts. You only think he was a bastard because he won that fight you picked. He did not win. I can't believe you're still sore about that. He didn't win, Fives. Shut up. I can't believe you're talking poodoo about a dead Vod. I loved Heavy, but he still didn't win. John, who's heard hours of the same kind of thing between Nico and Noel, rolls his eyes and says, a little more loudly than he probably needs to,
Watch the steps.
Then, of course, he has to lunge to catch Fives as he misses the first stair beneath all the moss and almost overbalances. Fives yelps, snatching for a handhold, and Echo leaps, but John is closer. He lets Fives slam into him, wincing faintly at the weight of all that armor, and braces himself as Fives claws his way upright.
Careful, he says, amused.
Right, those steps, Fives says sheepishly. Noted.
You okay?
Echo asks John, giving Fives an exasperated look.
For someone whose head is all empty space, he's heavy. Hey! Fives huffs, but he glances at John. Okay? He asks.
I'm fine, John says, more amused than anything. He might have a bruise or two from pointy bits of plastoid, but that hardly matters in the long run.
You're all wet, Fives corrects, and he's frowning a little. I know Jedi don't generally carry luggage, but if we're in the mountains...
Noel's ability to use the Force and manipulation of fire would come in handy right now, John allows, but he just shakes his head. It doesn't bother me, he says, and steps away from where Five's hand rests on his shoulder blade, heavy and too close to intriguing. John doesn't normally feel attraction so readily, but it's been a while since he interacted with anyone but Nico, Noel, and Faye in a friendly manner. It's just a physical reaction, that's all.
It will if your clothes freeze solid around you, Echo points out. But he doesn't hesitate to follow John down the stairs. If you don't have troopers, where have you been serving, if you can tell us?
I've been dead, will probably raise a few too many questions. John debates his answers for a moment, and then says, looking for ways to remove the leaders of this war.
Oh, Five says, frowning. Without any backup? That seems dangerous. I know ARC troopers are trained for things like that.
John shakes his head, cutting him off. I'm not fit to be a commander, he says flatly. And it's true. It's why he's never taken a Padawan. One wrong step. One bad day, one push too many, and he lives close enough to the edge to fall. Faye will stop him, and Noel and Nico will hold him, but anyone else has a high chance of being collateral damage. John has faith in the Order, in the Force. It's faith in himself that has always been hard to come by, and the knowledge that he might forget that the ends never justify the means. He can say without hubris that he's strong, but that just makes him more dangerous, and the risk greater.
Echo is watching him, quiet, thoughtful.
When John glances over at him, though, he just tips his head, then says, "There are other options. It doesn't have to be clones under your command." John opens his mouth to answer. But as he does, Echo's foot hits the next step. There's a sharp, ringing clink that echoes through the silent hallway. And Echo instantly freezes stock still, hardly even looking like he's breathing. The grinding, creaking groan of mechanisms starting to turn shakes the stairway, just as the distant glow of crystals wink out, plunging the temple into complete darkness.
"Carking monkey lizard poodoo," Five says. And John couldn't agree more.